You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 5th of May 2022, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at radioalbion.com because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How's life treating you?
I can't believe, not that we're doing this today, but I can't believe that abortion is back on the front page. That was my big issue back in 89, 90 when I was a teenager. And that was what got me into this whole world, was the abortion issue. I have to dust off all my old arguments now. But, you know, you hear this collective howl from the whores of the world who aren't going to have their main source of birth control legal in certain states anymore. So it is pretty exciting. But we're talking about something else today.
That is certainly great news. And yeah, we will have to talk about that at some point. That is very good news, what's going on there. And I do hope the leak is genuine and that they do overturn Roe v. Wade. But as you say, we're going to be talking about something different today. We're going to be moving back over to Russia and Ukraine, particularly the sanctions against Russia and Russia's response to them. We have quite a few quotes here to get into. Russian President Vladimir Putin signed a decree on Wednesday that introduces a temporary procedure for the distribution of profits of domestic firms to those from unfriendly countries to whom such payments are due. The document was published on the official government portal for legal information. In particular, the document says that if a decision is made on the distribution of profits, the payment of such profits to what are called foreign creditors will now be carried out in accordance with the presidential decree signed in early March. According to the document, if a Russian firm decides to distribute profits, residents from unfriendly countries will by default receive their share in a special Type C bank account. Funds cannot be withdrawn from such an account, but can only be directed to a limited range of purposes, such as paying taxes or buying OFZs. However, the Central Bank and Ministry of Finance may issue a separate permit to transfer funds to a regular account. In early March, Putin signed a decree introducing a temporary procedure for fulfilling obligations to foreign creditors from countries that have imposed sanctions against Russia. This applied to debt obligations, credits, loans, bonds of Russian regions and municipalities, as well as individuals and legal entities that make payments totaling more than 10 million rubles per month, which is $150,000 or the hard currency equivalent. The decree meant that a Russian borrower having hard currency obligations to foreign creditors has the right to pay them in rubles. It also obliged foreign creditors or the nominal holders of securities to open Type C accounts for loans at Russian banks. To meet their obligations related to the issuance of securities, a Russian borrower can open such an account with Russia's Central Securities Depository. The borrower can then transfer funds in the ruble equivalent at the central bank's exchange rate on the day the payment is made. So this really does look as if Russia is basically just mirroring what's going on in the West. And I do like the idea of the fact that any profits that are now made from these Russian companies can only be spent on paying taxes in Russia. But they've also added this bit here that the central bank may issue a separate permit, like an individual permit, to transfer the funds to regular accounts. So I guess if somebody isn't treating Russia badly, then they might be able to get the money and not just have to pay taxes with it. What do you make of this, Max? Matt, sorry.
Well, you know, Johnson's law goes triple here, because not only is this a country that few people know about and an economy that few people know about, but a technical aspect of that economy that almost no one knows anything about. So these people can say it's all made of cheese and people will probably accept it. First of all, this isn't an obscure matter. Putin is being a diplomatic genius, as he's been so many times in the past. He can't just – I mean, when I first read this, I said, wait a minute. What does he give a damn about Russians paying back foreign loans? The first thing he should do is give them the finger. But realizing that that would never work, that would just harden the position of the West. He's making it more painful for that would make it more painful. Here, the creditors are still going to get their money. If they could, he just said, screw you, they wouldn't get anything. But now they're going to think twice about divesting if they're still going to get their cash. At the same time, it's going to be put in that, especially the type C is specific to Russia. It's not a technical term and only used what amounts to strengthening the currency, because it can be done in rubles. And we will see in a minute the ruble is doing very well. So they're not cutting the West off entirely, because there is – I mean, Russia is a creditor country anyway. But for individuals, the corporations are going to say, OK, well, let me get my money first, and then maybe I'll think about pulling out, because there's going to be a lot of people trying to skirt the law here. But there's a list of unfriendly countries, which includes the entire EU, which also includes Germany. And of course, Liechtenstein, Monaco, Norway, and San Marino, North Macedonia. What is Russia going to do without their investment? And an OFZ is something similar. You mentioned the OFZ, which is just a federal loan. It's a Russian bond. And on top of all this, remember, Russia has billions and billions of American dollars, if not more than that. And not to mention all that, this is a first step in nationalization, which the law has already been passed that this is going to start happening. Apple's going to be in a lot of trouble here. Russia is just getting started in its answer to the sanction, which continued to grow. Although I thought this was, total, 10 years ago, and still major Russian banks are not sanctioned. Gazprom Bank isn't sanctioned, because there's so much Western business in Russia. They're still going to get their money, but it's going to benefit Russia in numerous ways, including strengthening the currency. So all this nonsense about default and currency going out of control and inflation, that's something invented in the Western press. These are highly diplomatic. In other words, a shot across the bow. If you don't go along with this, we're just going to nationalize it. We're giving you a break here. He knows the power that he has and knows how to work it. It's actually a pretty brilliant move, as technical as it sounds.
Well, Ursula von der Leyen the other week was saying that Russia was going to default, but instead of that, they're paying back their debts and ensuring that money can then only be spent in Russia. Basically, it's rather similar to America insisting that everything has to be paid for in dollars with Saudi Arabia, and then the dollars can only be spent in America. So it's pretty much the same thing. Well, as you pointed out there, you brought up Germany. Germany is losing its export business. German exports to Russia plummeted to about 860 million euros in March because of the sanctions imposed, as well as further measures to restrict exports and unsanctioned behaviour of market participants, Germany's Federal Statistical Office said on Wednesday. That is the lowest level of exports in almost two decades. Imports from Russia declined by 2.4% month over month to 3.6 billion euros in the same period. The disruption of trade with Moscow led to a 3.3% fall in overall German exports last month, according to the press release. Looking ahead, despite richly filled order books, the short-term outlook for German exports does not look encouraging, said ING analyst Carsten Brzeski, as quoted by Bloomberg. The war in Ukraine is very likely to disrupt other supply chains for good, he said, more generally with a high risk that the war accelerates the trend of deglobalization. And high energy and commodity prices for longer, the German export sector is facing more headwinds ahead. Russia accounted for 2.3% of total German foreign trade and was the fourth most important country for German goods outside of the European Union in 2021. The main goods that Germany exported to Russia included vehicles, machinery, trailers, and chemical products. Russia's main exports to Germany were crude oil, natural gas, metals, and coal. Last month, S&P Global warned of a possible financial shock if there is a trade rupture between the two countries. That could put a dent in German manufacturing, one of three global manufacturing centres, after the US and China, S&P's chief economist Paul Grunwald told CNBC. Two things I want to pick up on there. Deglobalisation, which is, of course, a good thing. And Russia is providing all the raw materials here for Germany to make things out of them. And if Russia is not providing the raw materials, what are the Germans going to be making? I'm sure those are probably the two things you want to pick up on as well, Matt. What are your thoughts?
Well, I've been talking about this since the very beginning, that the United States and to some extent Brussels is ordering, you know, the German elite what to do. By far, of all the foreign investment projects in Russia, Germany has the most by a huge margin. Number two, by the way, is the USA, which very few people are aware of. But essentially what the EU and the US is telling these guys, Mercedes-Benz and, you know, all these other firms, is, you know, you're going to lose a lot of money, you're going to lose a lot of profit, and but it's all for the greater good because Russia's evil. Like in 2021, for example, this is what Germany is standing to lose here. The value of goods traded went up almost 40%, $65 billion. And that comes from the German Federal Statistics Office. And Germany's imports from Russia rose massively, rising 54.2% compared to 2020. And that, you know, and so there, you had a huge recovery from COVID here. Money is pouring into both countries. This is a mutually beneficial arrangement because, you know, the countries are relatively similar levels of development. You know, Russia is still the seventh largest economy in the world. The raw materials go to the West and the finished products from Russia go to the East. So they have a perfectly balanced economy. So what the U.S. is demanding is that Germany lose this massive amount of money, this huge – I mean, they recovered from COVID quickly thanks to Russia and the Chinese economy. That number, by the way, is much higher in terms of the trade that Germany does with Russia, especially when it comes to foreign investment. And so this is the reason you mentioned that the president of Russia can give individual permission to get out of the repayment system. I have the feeling that's for Germany and France, because they are very iffy about all of this. This is going to crack the EU right in half. You're not going to tell the billionaire stockholders in Mercedes-Benz where they're going to make their money. What are they going to do? Mercedes-Benz are mostly made in Russia right now, with some Russian technology and everything else. So this shows you just how – and this massive recovery just over a year from the COVID era is Germany's going to have to now give all of this up. There's only two countries in the world that we talked about deglobalization. There's only two countries in the world, I think, that are completely self-sufficient, or at least potentially self-sufficient. And that's the U.S. And Russia. They have pretty much everything they need. They don't really need to export anything or import anything and still function. If worse came to absolute worst. And Russia is cushioned for a lot of other reasons anyway. And somehow I think the American elite still think that countries really need to trade everything and free trade has to be the norm or else we're all going to be poverty stricken. And that certainly isn't the case. We've been saying from the very beginning, all of this stuff is going to force Russians to become more self-sufficient, which they can very easily do. If a foreign firm is kicked out or nationalized, a Russian firm is just going to take its place. Over time, over at least the medium term, this is going to benefit the Russian economy. Just think of South Africa in the 70s and the early 80s, where they had zero unemployment and they made everything from cars to toothbrushes. You know, and especially a country the size of Russia with the technological background and the markets that it has, this really in the medium term isn't going to bother anybody. But I don't think the Americans understand the nature of autarky and what it means to be self-sufficient.
Well, as you said, the ruble seems to be going up in value. The Russian ruble rose to its strongest position against the US dollar in over 2 years on Tuesday, amid reports that Russia's dollar payments on two foreign bonds reached the creditors just before the deadline, averting a default. The exchange rate reached 66.43 rubles per dollar at 13.06 Greenwich Mean Time during Tuesday's foreign exchange trading. Bloomberg data showed, although the Russian currency lost some of its gains later in the day. The Moscow exchange was closed on Tuesday due to an extended public holiday. When trading in Moscow opened on Wednesday, the Russian currency was at just above 67 rubles per dollar at 15.50 GMT, the highest level since March 2020. The ruble has been strong against the euro as well, touching 70 in afternoon trading in Moscow, its highest point since February 2020. This comes as the EU proposed a sixth package of sanctions against Moscow, which includes the gradual phasing out of Russian oil imports. On Friday, the Russian central bank cut its key interest rate to 14% in the latest attempt to boost lending in the sanction-hit economy. The euro is currently hovering around a five-year low against the dollar, with soaring inflation and energy uncertainty caused by the Ukraine-related sanctions against Russia. And I'm quite interested in this this key interest rate of 14%. I mean, that seems very high compared to what our interest rates are like over here in Britain. I think it's around about 0% or 1%, isn't it, Matt? Because there's been so much usury that's going on. Am I right in thinking that?
Yeah, they're, of course, keeping inflation at bay. But we just talked about why, and it's going to keep going down, why they don't have to have the high interest rates anymore. Because if they're going to force these creditors to use rubles and energy and other whether it be with India or anywhere else, that this is going to be done with rubles. The demand for rubles now has gone up. They don't really need to worry about inflation much anymore. There's such a small amount of understanding about the Russian economy and its historical background, both in the Soviet and the pre-Soviet era. I don't think they get this, that this is, and you know I'm going to include this, you know, the massive problems in the West because of this. And it certainly isn't Ukraine related. These sanctions have been around for a very long time. And so, you know, Russian money is going into bonds, which is why the other policy is important with such a high interest rate. And this is, they're going to keep going up as energy prices. We're going to see later in here in a couple minutes why the cutting reliance on Russian natural gas and oil is such a joke. You see where they're going to try to get it from and how ridiculous that is. No one can match Russian prices. No one can match the infrastructure. No one can match Russia's ability to subsidize countries, having it below market rate all over the place, Ukraine especially, and Poland. So the West already deeply in debt, not recovered from 2008, let alone recovered from 2020, is now taking yet another massive shock with these sanctions. And Russia is handling it perfectly, knowing full well that eventually some of these people are going to say, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. Inflation's going through the roof. Unemployment is increasing. And we have this massive third world invasion that, you know, they're unassimilable. And by the way, I predict that as this gets worse in the West, they're going to be more and more reliant on this third world labor force for much low wages and to break any unionization. I have the feeling that's going to happen in the future as a way to compensate for what's going on as far as these sanctions. Russia is okay. Their markets are elsewhere. And the U.S. doesn't know that. The U.S. still thinks it's this economic superpower. And all it's going to do is break the economy, which are already broken, increase debt, increase inflation, increase unemployment, increase resentment. And pretty soon, a few people are going to catch on that this is the Americans' fault. Russia never threatened anybody. Russia never bothered anyone except liberals the world over. They're obviously going to win this at least in the medium term. But it's going to hurt Western Europe, who's already hurting so badly. And the ruble is just going to keep getting stronger. And Putin knows how to do it. His prime minister was the tax chief for a long time. He's essentially a finance guy. And he knows exactly what he's doing here. He has such a solid group of advisors. They hold the cards right now. The West wasn't even if COVID didn't happen, even if this stuff didn't happen, the West was still dying, economically speaking. But it can't take another shock, and yet this is another shock. And the only beneficiary is, you know, nationalism, Russian autarky, and then that influence on other places, and they continue to develop their interests in the East and cutting. They've been trying to cut off the West for a long time. The West just doesn't understand. Over even in the short term, maybe definitely in the medium term, this benefits the Russians.
Well, just saying that they're cutting their interest rates to 14%, I mean, that's a normal interest rate. We don't have normal interest rates anymore, as you say, Mark, because we haven't recovered from the 2008 crash in the West. Well, Russian President Vladimir Putin introduced a package of economic measures on Tuesday to retaliate against international sanctions placed on Moscow. The new decree seeks to protect Russia's national interests and was adopted in connection with the unfriendly actions of the United States and its allies that violate international law and aim to illegally deprive the Russian Federation and Russian legal entities of their property, the decree published on the Kremlin's website states. Putin gave the Cabinet of Ministers 10 days to determine the list of persons to be placed under the reciprocal sanctions. The new measures prohibit government agencies, organizations, and individuals from carrying out transactions, including signing external trade contracts, with legal entities, individuals, and organizations on the new blacklist. The decree also prohibits the export of products and raw materials if they are destined to sanctioned persons. Russian entities and persons are also prohibited from fulfilling their obligations and carrying out financial transactions with the sanctioned companies and individuals. This comes after the US and the EU placed several rounds of unprecedented economic sanctions on Russia over its ongoing military operation in Ukraine. Assets of the Russian Central Bank and various other entities and businessmen were frozen abroad. The country was effectively cut off from the dollar and the euro-dominated money markets, and a wide array of foreign businesses stopped dealing with the country. So, they're this is basically just the same as what the West has done to Russia, but I guess people don't really realise that Russia can turn around and do the same back to the West. I mean, that's what's going on here, isn't it, Matt?
Absolutely. You know, they see that, listen to the last line here, a wide array of foreign businesses stopped dealing with the country, as if that's not going to cost them a fortune. The Russian interest rate, the Russian labor force is very well educated. They're not known for strikes. They're decently paid. And the state protects their jobs to a great extent. This is a perfect labor force for a country like Germany or France or even the Central Europe otherwise. And remember something, and I've said this before, but because the U.S. simply stole Russian assets, and they're not as big as the West is saying. Most of them are in Russia. But countries are now going to pull their assets from American or EU-based companies. And securities, because you can't trust. If the U.S. is simply going to steal from whoever it's irritated by at the moment, if you are a country that maybe is iffy with the U.S. from time to time, or even if they're not, especially Germany and France that are already practically breaking with the EU, they're going to pull out. They're not going to trust the U.S. ever again if they could simply steal this stuff and then give it to whoever they want, give it to Ukraine, which, of course, that money will never be seen again. No one is going to trust the U.S. ever again. No one's ever going to want to keep large amounts of assets in denominated in dollars or in American banks or anything like that, because they know they could just simply take it. You know, the U.S. has been doing this with treaties. Now they're doing it with money. No one trusts the Americans here. And Putin is, you know, piecemeal realizing that the ultimate – well, he has two ultimate weapons. Number one, the huge amounts of dollars that he possesses, and number two, the nationalization issue. And that law is sitting there on his desk waiting to be signed. That's going to cost these companies billions more than they're already suffering with. And my God, this is going to have massive ripples in the West at a time where no one in the West can afford it.
Well, I guess stealing the Libyan sovereign wealth fund was just dipping the toes in the water at first before then going after Russia's assets. Well, as you pointed out, Matt, the EU has to get its gas from somewhere. The European Union will be turning to Africa to replace imports of natural gas from Russia, Bloomberg reported on Tuesday. Countries in Africa, such as Nigeria, Senegal, and Angola, offer largely untapped potential for liquefied natural gas. The media outlet cites a draft EU document that it reviewed. The European Commission is set to announce its plans for energy cooperation with the Western African nations and other suppliers later this month, as part of efforts to cut its energy reliance on Moscow amid the ongoing military offensive in Ukraine, Bloomberg adds. The EU pledged to slash Russian gas imports by two-thirds by next year and to eliminate its dependence before 2030. To achieve that, Europe has to reset its relationships with traditional suppliers and reach out to new emerging ones, the EU document adds, as the bloc needs to boost its LNG imports by 50 billion cubic meters a year until 2030 and increase shipments of pipeline gas from countries other than Russia. To meet its goal, the EU must fully implement its agreement with the US for the delivery of liquefied natural gas and also extend trade with suppliers such as Egypt, Israel, Azerbaijan, and Australia. The EU's push to wean itself off Russian gas flow in line with Ukraine-related sanctions led to increased purchases by Europe amid already growing global demand and high LNG prices. Russia has been a major supplier of energy to the EU, meeting roughly 40% of the bloc's demand for natural gas. And just how much is that going to cost to import all of that from all the way over there in Africa rather than just getting it through a pipeline from Russia? I mean, it really is cutting off your nose to spite your face. What do you think of this deal? I mean, it could be good for Africa, couldn't it, Matt?
How do you read this and not laugh? There's a reason that these fields are largely untapped. Nigeria, for example, is swimming in oil. And even Shell had to pull out of that country because they don't have the infrastructure. They don't have the labor force. and there's always some terrorist group blowing this stuff up. And so no one really gets their oil from there. That should be – Nigeria should be Saudi Arabia right now in terms of income. But can you imagine, you're so screwed in terms of energy that you have to go to Africa. First of all, a lot of these places use Russian infrastructure because theirs has always been the best. And there's no profit involved with their largely state industries. Number two, if Russian infrastructure isn't there, there's no infrastructure there. So that means they're going to have to build this stuff from the ground up. Literally go digging into the mud to put the pipeline. That's how fundamental it's going to have to be. There's a reason these people weren't used before. When Russia cut – when the eastern part of Ukraine cut – because that was a big coal-producing region – cut the rest of Ukraine off, they were spending 10 times the market rate to get coal from South Africa of all places with this massive trip up to Ukraine. This is what they're asking not only companies but their citizens to deal with. Inflation is going to explode, not just because of the massive bailouts and all this money that's floating around with no production value, but now – this is going to be a fortune in the short and the medium term. They're going to be – this is a joke. West Africa, I'm familiar with the oil situation and again in Nigeria. There's a reason that Shell pulled out. There's a reason that BP pulled out. This is ridiculous. This is the West saying we are screwed, that we have to go thousands of miles away, where they have no infrastructure, where they don't have the labor force for this kind of thing. They don't have the infrastructure for this kind at any level, not just the oil and gas, but any advanced economic infrastructure here. Nothing. Most of these countries are loaded with violence and factions. The first thing these groups, the Islamic or whatever, are going to do is blow these things up. This is why Nigeria is not a wealthy country, because despite the fact that it's literally floating on a sea of oil. This is almost hilarious, except you can have a lot of people freezing to death. And not only that, you're going to have massive inflation. Either we don't have enough reason for inflation to go up, this is going to make it far worse, which means unemployment is going to go up. While, of course, the elite are going to be very, very comfortable. They are playing quite literally with fire here. They're going to go to West Africa? How much is that going to – you know, it's – I don't even know – there's only so much I could say about it. This is – the West has screwed itself. If there's any proof, this is it.
Well, there does appear to be at least some sane voices left, one in particular, and of course that's coming from Hungary. While multiple European leaders have publicly proclaimed they won't buy Russian gas in rubles, as Russian President Vladimir Putin has demanded, 10 EU countries are technically going along with Putin's plan, Hungarian official Gergely Gulyás told public radio on Sunday. According to Gulyás, these countries' leaders are not admitting this in order to be seen as being good Europeans. Gulyás said that Hungary has opened a euro account with Russia's Gazprom Bank, which then converts payments into rubles before transferring them to suppliers in Russia. This system allows European buyers to comply with Putin's demand, made in late March, that unfriendly countries switch to Russia's national currency to buy its natural gas. There are 9 other countries using the same payment scheme, but because today the idea of being a good European also means that the leaders of those countries are not honest when speaking either in the international arena or to their own people, the other 9 countries won't say that they are doing the same thing, said Gulyás, who serves as Prime Minister Viktor Orbán's chief of staff. There should be no doubt in anyone's mind that countries importing raw materials from Russia are using exactly the same method to pay for Russian gas, he added. It is unclear which EU countries Gulyás was referring to. Russian energy giant Gazprom has already shut off supplies to Poland and Bulgaria after both refused to pay in rubles, but a Bloomberg report last week stated, as Gulyás did, that 10 of the bloc's member states have already set up accounts with Gazprom Bank, and 4 have actually paid for Russian gas using this mechanism. Hungary depends on Russia for all of its gas imports and has therefore opposed EU sanctions on this critical commodity. Gulyás reiterated this commitment to Russian energy and opposition to Brussels' sanction regime on Sunday. We must not adopt sanctions with which we primarily penalise ourselves instead of those we want to sanction, he said, referring to soaring energy costs throughout Europe. While the government in Budapest has condemned Russia's military operation in Ukraine, Gulyás said that it would continue to buy our energy at the cheapest possible price to offset any costs on the Hungarian people. And that's the most sensible thing I've heard a European politician say in a long time. He's actually putting the needs of the Hungarian people first and buying the energy at the cheapest possible price. What a wonderful notion. Matt, what are your final thoughts on all of this?
Can you imagine, you know, if you're Poland and your economy is now heading towards mass inflation and a very cold winter in a few months, and then you're going to look just over, you know, just a few miles away in Hungary and seeing how they're going to do a million times better than you without the, you know, without the difficulty. This is going to lead Hungary to join the Eastern Bloc to a great extent. And Bulgaria, I kind of forgot about that. Bulgaria is one of the most pro-Russian countries in Europe. That government doesn't have a shred of legitimacy there. You're going to start seeing unrest in a place like that. The EU dismantled the energy infrastructure in Bulgaria. I had a paper on this a long time ago. It's nuclear, everything. You know, Bulgaria was almost self-sufficient a long time ago. Well, joined the EU, and they couldn't compete. So that entire now Bulgaria is dependent on gas from elsewhere. It is how irrational it is. And now the Hungarians are aware of what's going to happen. Their Western companies are simply going to lie. But this is mostly a private sector matter anyway. They're going to do everything they can. They're going to hide money. They're going to open up secret accounts. We've talked about this too, in order to get around this. You're going to have whole industries growing up about how these Western countries can get around these sanctions and lie about them. And eventually, if they get too much trouble, they're simply going to break. So countries that are going along with this are going to see their economies go into a tailspin. Others are going to do very well. And of course, they have to cut off the Russian market too if they're going to cut the oil supplies. So this is almost as bad as the African natural gas thing. Russia, and remember, I want, before we go, the Russian economy is not dependent on oil and gas. This has been the main issue. But Norway and Canada are more dependent on oil and gas than the Russians are. So maybe, you know, 8% of the economy as a whole. Exports are a little higher, especially to the West. And it is very strategic. So don't think that you cut the gas off, Russia's going to collapse. They have a robust economy outside of that. But this is just Russia's great big ace in the hole. And oh my God, this has almost been funny how screwed the West is when it comes to this oil and gas deal.
Well, it does seem as if you cut the gas out, it's the EU that collapses, and Hungary can see that. And Hungary is going to have a good economy, I think, leading forwards. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.